Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of experience. It's your look inside one of the world's most experienced active investment managers. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by Capital Client Group, Inc.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now I'm joined for our Friday Forum by Lorraine Clifford-Lee, Fine Gael Senator, Cathal Berry TD, Independent TD for Kildare South, and Craig Hughes, Political Editor for the Irish Daily Mail. Good morning, one and all, and welcome. Cathal, I go to you first on Gaza and the sale of arms to the Irish Defence Forces. What were we buying from the Israelis?
Yeah, so not a lot. Over the last 20 years, we'd have bought helmets for our soldiers, respirators, kind of gas masks, some ammunition, but mostly at the moment it's drones. We have about a dozen Israeli-made drones. They're about the size of the wingspan of a seagull, basically.
Tiny drones.
Very, very tiny. Most of them are not serviceable at the moment, so a very, very limited stock.
And so deciding not to buy from them is not a major blow to the Defence Forces?
Certainly not. The Defence Forces would have been expecting this decision anyway. And I suppose, look, value is very important when it comes to procurement, but values are also very important. And ethical components should be a red line issue for Ireland. I'd be very supportive of the Taoiseach's position on this.
Lorraine, what about the overflights of weaponry from the United States to Israel using our airspace?
It's something that we definitely have to look at. I think most Irish people are speaking at one on our position in relation to what's going on, particularly in Gaza at the moment and the occupied West Bank. And for a long time, Fianna Fáil has maintained that position. So I think it's something that we really do need to look at. I think a lot of people feel very strongly, and I'm glad to hear Cathal agrees with the Taoiseach's decision to stop buying it, because we have to make a statement as a country.
Now, Craig, I want to move on to another aspect of all of this, and that they are the three cessations that have been agreed by the Israelis and Hamas to stop hostilities from 6 a.m. until 3 p.m. over a period of three different stoppages to allow the vaccination of kids against polio. Now, some people look on this as a positive sign that the Israelis and Hamas can talk about something without falling out. But on the other hand, I'm wondering, and I'll talk to Cathal about this in a moment, whether or not the Israelis are just afraid of an outbreak of polio that might affect Israel.
Yeah, I think we've seen some false dawns before in relation to a potential ceasefire. I think, you know, given the threat of polio, it's perhaps unsurprising that they're willing to make an agreement here. But when you look at the language coming from the Israeli government, it doesn't seem like we're any closer, sadly, to a ceasefire yet. So I wouldn't be holding my breath that we'll.
But I mean, the idea that they vaccinate you by day and they bomb you by night. I mean, this is nonsense.
Yeah, well, the language has been that the two sides have been at one, I guess, in their arguments. I mean, Israel keeps maintaining that, you know, they will agree to ceasefire if all the hostages are released and their terms agreed to. On the other side, Hamas are saying that they won't agree to that. And we've had this standoff, and in the meantime, thousands more people die each week. So it's a bleak situation. And unfortunately, I don't think that we're going to see a ceasefire in the immediate.
Cathal, yeah. Am I too cynical about this vaccination program?
And Craig is 100% there as well. Look, this is as a result of American pressure, most likely after the machine gunning of the World Food Programme armoured vehicle there only a couple of days ago. So it's a small bit of an out-of-branch stateside. There's nothing really in this at all. Netanyahu's position is he wants to finish the war militarily in Gaza so he can switch to the Northern Front. And if this conflict ends, Netanyahu goes straight back to court because his court case is suspended as a result of his troops.
And what about the outbreak of violence on the West Bank, which seems to be the most significant in a long, long time?
In about 20 years. Look, the overarching goal of the certain elements of the current Israeli cabinet is to drive the Gazans into Egypt and drive the West Bankers into Jordan, basically, and have this homogenous society in Israel, which is a very, very dangerous thing.
Now, I want to go to this week's activities. The CAO results were given out, and your Fianna Fáil colleague, Norma Foley, talking about trying to level the playing pitch for the people who maybe got maximum points and didn't get their courses. What's to be done? You spend 6 years in school, you put your head down, you get 625 points, then the people behind you might get 600, they get an uplift and they get 625 and you don't get your course place.
I know, and I've come across a couple of stories like that, and I think we have to maintain the integrity of the system firstly, but I am always drawn back to the children that did and the young people that did the Leaving Cert this year, my own nephew among them. Those children are, as a result of COVID, they never sat a state exam. So a lot of them were, I suppose, working in a vacuum in terms of sitting state exams and going through that procedure. So it was only right and proper that they were actually afforded
maximum points and has the number requisite for that course, but then they're in a raffle.
I know, and the, it's not fair, no. And I think the solution to that is creating more places for our students in those very high demand courses. And they're the same courses year on year. I did my Leaving Cert 25 years ago, I think, at this stage. And it's the same types of courses. And our population is increasing in this country. We have more demand. We have more people progressing on to third level. And this is a good thing. But we need to, as a government, match that with providing more places in our universities right around the country, not just concentrated in Dublin.
It affects relatively few people, but it's still not fair. I mean, we hear about the tears of joy when the results come out, Craig, and then we hear the tears of desperation when, having done everything that was asked of you, you don't get your place.
Sure. Obviously, grade inflation is a key aspect of it for this year, for that cohort of students who were impacted by the pandemic. I think you probably would expect that would kind of...
Next year, if you didn't quite make it and you've got your grade inflation, next year it's down by 2% and the year after and 3 years' time, it's gone.
But there's a lot of paths.
So you hang loose in there and wait and get into your medicine when you're competing with people who don't have the bonus.
Well, Pat, there's a lot of paths to the destination now. Unlike, again, years ago when I did my Leaving Cert, there was one route into medicine, there was one route into actuary, one route into law. There's lots of different routes postgraduates. And I take your point.
The quote is, suppose you did your driving test and the tester said to you, well done, you've passed your test, but I'm sorry, I can't give you a licence because we've already filled our quota of licences for this month. Sorry, you're back on the L plate.
But you make a good point there, Pat. There's a small number of individuals here, and I wonder, could we do an audit in relation to how many people are affected here? Because I do remember Simon Harris, when he was Minister for Higher Education, he did create extra capacity in the short term. And I wonder if you drill down to the numbers, is there next two or three places that could be created on a particular course to satisfy that very small demand?
Yeah, you'd imagine something like, and one of the cases in point was economics and finance in UCD, and you're thinking, well, it doesn't require a dentist chair. It doesn't require an operating theatre. You know, why not squeeze a few more into the classroom?
Yeah, I think we can do something there.
Yeah.
Like Patrick O'Donovan should be on this. I'd say he probably is. Mm-hmm. And if there's a precedent from a couple of years back with Simon Harris, I don't see why we can't replicate that again.
Now, how many of you have to use the keys with the new traffic plan? Any of you tried it? No?
I didn't try it, no.
Craig?
I actually thankfully don't drive, so I'm delighted. I'm sure you're thrilled. You have a lot of angry textures coming in. But
I'm actually a very proud Culchie, Pat, so I generally just get the train up as well. But no, I haven't actually driven over O'Connell Bridge yet. It is phase one, though, and I think we won't know exactly what it's going to be like until Monday, until all the schools and all the employees are back. And I think it's too early to say just yet.
Yeah, and I heard Minister Ryan saying, you know, these are not major engineering activities, so if they don't work, we can reverse them. They've never reversed anything, even things that have caused all sorts of mayhem, you know, cycle lanes badly designed and so on. They remain complete with their plastic poles and all the rest of it. We were talking during the week about our inability to long-term plan infrastructure, and with the news about an ageing population which will need more medical help, and a younger population which will probably need more schools and public transport and all the rest of it, what is it about us that we can't do long term?
I don't think there's anything particularly about us. If you look at any other country that's developing at such a rapid rate like we have down through the years, they have similar capacity problems. But we do need to seriously look at infrastructure. I live in North County Dublin, and that's where the population is rapidly increasing. There's a lot of building construction going on at the moment, and I'm inundated with people talking about creche places, school places, public transport, these people who are coming into the city centre to work, they're the young people that are fueling the economy and fueling the future of this country, and they can't get around because we don't have adequate public transport. It's something that we really need to rapidly look at, and the Metro project will specifically help North County Dublin. And I am heartbroken when I hear people who live in the south side of Dublin talk about the Metro like it's something to bring people up to the airport twice a year to go on holidays. It's primarily for people living in North County Dublin and north of the Listenhall stop who need it, desperately need it, because that's where the housing is.
And who are not going to get it maybe for a decade in spite of the go-ahead.
But we need to go ahead, because we're not, I've been listening all summer to commentary from people and op-eds, people that I think maybe probably come to North County Dublin twice a year, like I said, to go to the airport, to go off on holidays. They don't live the reality that we in North County Dublin live with. And we need the delivery of that. And I really hope that no talk of any alternative is going to be entertained. It's been delayed long enough. We need it delivered now. And the housing needs and of the country and of Dublin certainly are being absorbed in North County Dublin, yet we're not getting the infrastructure that we desperately need. And as I said, the people that are living in North County Dublin are fueling this economy through their labour and will continue to fuel it. And they're the young people that will be working and paying pensions for everybody else. And we need to deliver decent, adequate infrastructure so the quality of life can be maintained in North County Dublin.
Well, I think when we look at long-term planning, I think we have to start with pensions, right? For example, it's an issue that no political party wants to grasp. And the issue with that is going to be, say by 2050, 11% of our modified gross domestic product is going to go on pensions, right? But we're not currently funding it enough. So if that's going to be gobbling up more and more of our money as we progress towards that year, that's going to mean we're going to have tough choices around income tax or less spending on things like infrastructure. So you can't not plan for pensions and then expect.
But also the question of the retirement age. None of the political parties are prepared to embrace the fact that back when this whole idea, and I think it was the Kaiser or something who came up with it, that at 65 the information was that you last maybe a year or so after you hit 65, then you die. So pensions were not going to be an expense for very long. Yeah. Now people are living. A kid born today might live normally to be 100. Mm. So this problem is going to get worse and worse and worse. Yeah. So why are people retiring at 65 when it's, you know, maybe 85 is the new 65?
You know, exactly. And there was advice given to the Minister for Finance at the end of June. I reported on the front of the Irish Daily Mail this week that the pension age needs to be linked with life expectancy. It's as simple as that. And then actually Austin News, The Economist, had an interesting take on it that, you know, at the moment we're facilitating people to take their pension longer, right? And it comes at different rates than that. He goes, but if you're working in manual labour, the inverse needs to happen. You should be able to get out of it at 60 and pay less. But no political party wants to touch it. Fine Gael advocated for an increased pension age during the last election, got slaughtered for it. Fianna Fáil kicked a touch on the Pensions Commission. That recommended a slight increase, but that data is already dramatically out of date. And Sinn Féin, insanely, as far as I can see, still want to reduce it to 65. And like the advice is there in black and white in the Department of Finance and also from the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council. And I mean, the advice of the Minister for Finance was, if you don't do this, you're going to put a huge financial burden on the next generation.
And look, I think from the get-go, just I think it's fantastic news that the age expectancy or the life expectancy in Ireland has gone up. That's a really an indicator of success. We now have to grapple with the second-order effects of that. And as good as we actually have the data now, and we can horizon scan and we can provide early warning. I take your point on infrastructure.
But politicians don't horizon scan. I mean, their horizon is 5 years, the next election. Yeah. That's it, isn't it?
Some politicians do. And I think if you go back to the 40s and 50s, I think we were more ambitious as a country and as a people. In my own constituency, we have Palafuca Lakes, basically Beston Lakes. They built a massive dam. They resettled an entire village. They flooded an entire valley. We have renewable energy long before it became a thing. We've water being pumped into Dublin. So I think we were more ambitious back then. And this idea of a ministry of infrastructure, I think on principle it's a good idea, but Ireland has a small bit of a problem in that we have a constitutional cap of 15 senior cabinet ministers. To my knowledge, no other EU country has that. If you talk to any of the ambassadors in Dublin, they just go, why are you doing putting a constitutional cap? So I think that's something that could be looked at in the next.
And you don't necessarily need to have every cabinet minister there for the cabinet meeting. If your particular brief is not on the agenda, you know, you don't have to be there. If you've got a cabinet of 25 people, you might have a meeting with 15 every week and the other 10 are going about doing what they should be doing, running their departments.
Yeah.
In terms of infrastructure, on a recent trip to Spain, this listener says, I took the high-speed train from Madrid to Granada. Absolutely fantastic. I got there in half the time it would have taken me by car. And it got me thinking that these trains would be fantastic in Ireland, and they may even be a solution to the housing crisis. Imagine if you could travel from Galway to Dublin or from Cork to Dublin in around half the time it currently takes. The commute for students and workers would be manageable, thus relieving the pressure on the housing market in our bigger cities.
I totally agree with that comment. I think it's absolutely inconceivable that we don't have that, or we're not planning for it. We have a small island nation, really, and you should be able to travel from Galway or Waterford or Cork to Dublin and back home again. I've been to other countries in Asia that have the high speed trains, and they're just mind-blowing.
Yeah. Now, we had Conor Skeehan in during the week talking about the lack of planning, whether it's housing or education or healthcare. And he said, we shouldn't forget the good things that we've done. The Port Tunnel was built on time and on budget. Broadband is being rolled out to virtually every household in the country, and it looks like it'll be on time, on budget. Now, maybe the budget was generous, but still.
Absolutely. This narrative that we can't do anything right in this country, that we've done nothing right and we will continue to do nothing right. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Motorways built in 15 years, the motorway system as we know it. Not complete by any means, but built within.
And we have a fantastic country and we are developing rapidly. And the quality of life that people have in Ireland is vastly superior to even when I was a child, which, you know, wasn't too long ago.
Here's the issue, and you pointed out that we're developing very quickly. Your panel speaker just pointed out the issue with our country. We're developing far too quickly. The whole economy needs to slow down and release the pressure on housing, schools, healthcare, transport. We need a stable population, not a growing one. Life was much better back in the 90s when teachers and nurses stayed in Ireland and could afford to purchase a home. Why have successive governments broken the country with their raging tiger economic policies? That's from Kieran Murphy in Rathfarnham.
Well, that's nonsense, because if we slow down the population, we wouldn't have a working population to pay for the older generation that's going to be there.
I would take the opposite point of view, the opposite lesson from that parable, which is, if the country is changing rapidly, then we need a change in mindset in government, which reacts rapidly.
Yeah, but at the moment, we're going to have the largest increase in age-related expectancy of any EU member state. So this idea that we don't want younger people coming into our economy just doesn't stack up.
No, but do you know what I mean? Is the government actually reacting quickly enough to the numbers that are visible for our eyes?
This goes back to my point about the pensions, though. So no, of course not. They're not future planning for the long term.
Same old talk about progress in Ireland. I lived abroad for many years. Ireland is so far behind the UK and Europe, it's laughable and very restrictive. It doesn't seem like it's changing anytime soon, unfortunately. That's according to Simon in Kildare. Maybe he's not seeing the UK that a lot of people are seeing, which
Absolutely.
Is falling apart.
Pat, I travel internationally a bit with my position, and I'm meeting people in the health sphere in other countries that are absolutely amazed at the progress we've made in relation to women's healthcare here, the free contraception scheme, the menopause clinics, the see and treat clinics that we have. And that man that texted in, and it was definitely a man, saying life was better in the 1990s in Ireland, it certainly wasn't for women. And we have way more women in the workforce with independence and their own control over their finances than we've ever had before. And that's only a good thing.
Women in the workforce being crippled, all their wages going and paying for childcare.
It's not just women that have babies, Pat. Childcare isn't a women expense, it's a couple expense.
No, but you know what I mean. You've an extra income in this generation coming into most households, and it doesn't matter whose income you choose to maintain as the primary one for the household expenses. One income is going on childcare.
But the narrative, and you repeated that narrative, is that a woman's income is to pay for childcare. It shouldn't be that, because childcare is just a very brief period of
enough. I think you're dancing on the
knife. No, I'm not actually. Childcare is a brief expense, and I've gone through that very expensive period of time. But it's when women drop out of the workforce, they never get back into it at the same level, and they never gain the economic independence. So we need to shift away from that narrative that women's income pays for childcare.
Now, in terms of housing, loads of housing units being sold to local authorities, and this was in your paper this morning, I believe, that 40%, only 40% of the homes being built in Dublin, many of them are apartments, are actually available for purchase.
Yeah,
and nationally, it's 60%.
Yeah, it's a real difficulty. And I guess the other contrasting demand you had as well was, of course, local authorities were purchasing a lot of houses through the tenant in situ scheme, which was a very good scheme. It must be said it alleviated a lot of pressure on the back of the eviction ban being lifted. But we are in a space where we have a very tight pool of housing. So when you have the state competing for turnkey developments, that also narrows the pool available for people trying to get into the housing market.
But it means that ordinary working people paying their taxes are being used by government to compete against those very taxpayers for houses.
Yeah,
that's nonsense.
And you get the government you deserve. So,
I'd be against the principle of any bulk purchases, whether it's by the state or whether it's by a pension fund. Ideally, if the state wants to buy houses, it should be buying pepper pot houses just around a state. We need a housing mix everywhere we go. But you make a very good point about the motorway network, Pat, and it is excellent. It's something to be proud of. It's way better than the motorways that I was driving on the continent over the summer. We got foreign companies in from Spain and from Turkey and from elsewhere to build those motorways. Do we need assistance in building houses? I mean, if we get planning for a new town, for instance, and we have maxed out the labour capacity from a construction point of view, should we bring in a foreign company?
So where do the house builders live while they're building the houses?
They can come over with modular units. It's been done. I remember the motorway has been built in through Kildare, for instance. They had porta cabins, they had modular homes. They set up shop for about 12 months and they left as soon as the motorway was built.
And, these are people that aren't intending to stay here and set down roots, and they don't need a family home. They don't want a family home.
If the limiting factor is labour, then we can acquire it from abroad temporarily until the project is completed, and then we can get
out. But which abroad? Because the problem is Eastern Europe is thriving by and large, and all the people who came here went home because of COVID or whatever. They've stayed home because the living is good and it's not as expensive as here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but labour capacity is a serious issue. Like, for example, this nonsense that's going on at the moment with the government trumpeting housing commencements, while at the same time officials inside in the Department of Finance are saying that we actually don't have the capacity at the moment in the sector to build the houses to meet the level of commencement. So that needs to be something that they really need to target.
Interesting text here. You're absolutely spot on when it comes to alternative accommodation for students and refugees. Shipping containers provide an excellent, efficient, sustainable and clever solution. My son has just moved into one of 250 shipping containers in the Netherlands. The student accommodation is for international students only. The Netherlands has a similar housing crisis to Ireland, but they are thinking outside the box, no pun intended. These units are 27 square metres each with own kitchen, shower and WC. A glass door either end makes them really bright. They're stacked four stories high and have small balconies attached to each unit. We pay €660 per month, including all utilities. A similar setup could be erected in a matter of months here, a no-brainer.
100%. I've lived in a shipping container for many years in Africa, in the Middle East and all over Europe.
So why do they set their faces against it?
Well, it's modern methods of construction isn't really called shipping containers. It's called modular homes. What's unusual in Ireland is across the continent, you have modular buildings for hospitals, for schools, for houses, for apartment blocks. But in Ireland, the building regulations state that modular homes and buildings can only be developed to a two-storey building. So we need to amend the regulations and broaden the...
It makes absolute sense to amend it, as Cathal said, because it's working in other countries. It's not an inferior situation for people. Many people are very happy to live there and live very comfortably. So I would be in favour of that.
Craig?
I think if you're a student trying to get out of the nest, I think you'd much rather live in a shipping container than be back at mum and dad for 2 college years. So.
I think that's a truth, that's for sure. But, never mind high-speed trains. Get from Dublin to Galway anywhere after 9 o'clock in the evening on an intercity train. Impossible. Another one says, to Tullamore is only an hour, but there's no late train. Mm-hmm. And I've heard Kieran Cuddy talk about trying to get to Kilkenny after a certain time of the evening.
To North County Dublin, like beyond certain times, there might be only one train every hour and then something might happen that train. So you could be waiting 2 hours.
All right, on that, I don't know where we're going with this country at all. We'll have to.
It's a good country, Pat.
Redesign it.
We're doing well.
What's ironic is we seem to have got the hard stuff right. It's the easy stuff that's letting us down, you know?
We can do better. Cathal Berry, Independent TD for Kildare South, Lorraine Clifford Lee, Fianna Fáil Senator, and Craig Hughes, Political Editor for the Irish Daily Mail. Thank you very much for joining us. And don't forget, our items are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas Podcast. Investment professionals reveal how they find their next great idea, what gives them their investment edge, and a few personal stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Capital Client Group, Inc.